regardless of what business you're in, real estate to selling widgets to selling flip-flops on the side of the road, you got to understand your audience and you've got to come with education. And I know a lot in the sort of the service-based business realm, which is what we're sort of in, we don't have a widget. Our widget is us, right? Our widget is our brand and our personal brand, and people will invest and buy from us because of us first and foremost, and the deal is sort of kind of secondary.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another edition of Elevate Podcast. I'm Mark Edwards from Elite Agent.
And I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent.
So this year we're heading back over the blue waters to America.
Yeah, we're heading back over the pond again to talk syndication actually this week, because I thought it would be really interesting to look at some different models of real estate. And into my inbox a couple of weeks ago bounded a guy by the name of Reed Goossens. He's an author, but he's also into these real estate investment trusts, which are not super well known here. But I think that there's a lot of lessons that Reed has about building a business, and particularly about building a business where you're not known.
Yeah.
Because Reed was actually an engineer, had a safe job, shifted halfway across the world to America to chase a girl and a dream. And he's now wife. But over there, he purchased a small duplex for like $38,000 to now where he is syndicating multi-million dollar deals, commercial real estate deals across the US. So for an Aussie to go over there, fly 14 hours, it's a long trip. We've seen those Air New Zealand birds, they get tired in the ads, that is. But he's also like achieved financial freedom in a pretty short period of time. So he's got a really interesting story. And I think it's a really good one for people who are trying to establish themselves in a new market, no matter what you're doing. Like, it's an interesting to look at a different real estate system. But Reed's also got this great 6P formula for building a personal brand in any market.
So we're talking an Aussie, which has gone over to the States. We know that the default term is alien.
Yep.
If you're going to be turning up there without actually having your US citizenship.
That was us when we got stuck at LA
airport. Starting a business in a market that you're not familiar with, and also growing it to a multi-seven-figure business. So that's pretty incredible. There must be some amazing pieces of information that comes out of this one.
Well, it is. This one's all about building an ecosystem and also developing the mindset to overcoming your fear. Because can you imagine, you know, like we've been thinking about moving different places and it's always the fear of the unknown. Mm. And real estate agents often do it all the time. Like you get established in a particular area and then it's like, okay, for family reasons, you've got to move somewhere else. Or
well, you look at Glenn Catino, sort of up from the Bayside in Melbourne suburbs over to Beverly Hills.
That's it.
I mean, I tell you what.
Yeah, so it's the same sort of thing. So I think the 6P formula is a great takeaway. Mm-hmm. I think this other thing of Reed does talk a little bit about how to use other people's money to scale your business. And the big thing, obviously, is developing the mindset to overcome the fear of the unknown and keep pushing forward.
That sounds great. I'm sure there are a ton of actionable steps in this one.
You say that every week.
But it's so true.
I feel good that you like my notes.
I do.
And you can download my notes for this podcast.
And where do we go, Sam?
EliteAgentElevate.com.
And if you love them so much, you can support the program.
Support the show.
Yep. By subscribing to Extra, which every month you'll get a 40-page newsletter arriving on your desk, care of our friends of Australia Post, where you have the action guides from each of these podcasts throughout the month.
With all the links and the books that get mentioned, all of those resources in those action guides.
And there's usually a couple of sneaky little bonus episodes in there as well.
I like to sneak a little extra in there.
Is that what it's called, extra?
Pun intended. I am a little bit extra.
You are.
With that, I think we should get on with the show.
Let's go.
So welcome to the podcast, Reed Goossens.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's awesome to have you actually halfway across the world and an Aussie, a skippy in America.
Exactly. Yeah. Skipped across the pond and now call the United States home, specifically LA.
So what's it like over there in America at the moment? It's just coming into spring here. Is it still beautiful weather?
A little bit nippy in the morning here. I live in Los Angeles. It's very similar to probably Queensland in terms of maybe a little bit Sydney-esque come wintertime. So the mornings are fresh, but gets into a bit of heat throughout the day. Then cools off in the evening. So the surf's good. Coming into winter's always good surfing. So I went for a surf over the weekend, which was pretty nice, and good to get back in the water again.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it is, LA is a little bit like Sydney in that sort of sense with the beautiful beaches and stuff. You're making me want to go back.
Exactly.
So tell us a bit about your background and why you made LA home.
Yeah, I grew up on the Sunshine Coast, Coolum and Corroy. If for anyone, any of the listeners who know near Noosa, went to Sunshine Beach State High, had the typical upbringing with two parents as teachers, had a really solid blue collar state school education, pretty proud of that. And, you know, from a young age, parents taught me how to graft, how to grind, and always had jobs as kids growing up, understanding the value of a dollar, but also wanted to do well at school, and so I went to university and got a civil engineering degree from the University of Queensland, and I had a great couple of years in Brisbane going to college and, you know, university and all that sort of good stuff, playing rugby and meeting new people. And that was sort of my first taste of freedom, where moving from home on the Sunshine Coast down to Brisbane, and then did my degree. And then as soon as I graduated, had an opportunity to move overseas to London to work as a structural engineer on the 2012 Olympic Games, and took that with both hands and ran. And you know, like most Australians, as you know, we're sort of got in our DNA and go and explore the world. Yeah, and then that's really, you know, that's the start of it. So.
And then you left this safe job as an engineer, as a structural engineer, to chase a dream in America. So what was that dream? What were you chasing?
Yeah, the first time I went overseas was that London trip, and was away for about 2 years. Throughout that trip, I actually met my now wife, Erica, who's American. We met on the beaches of Spain, very romantic. I won't get into it. Won't have the sob story for your listeners. But came back to Aussie early 2010. Back in the civil engineering job, had spent a bunch of time obviously backpacking, and really realizing, okay, I've got this girl that I'm in love with half across the world. Coincidentally, she moved to Australia for a master's degree, but also really had this burning desire within inside of me to do more with my life. Really enjoyed studying engineering, but it just wasn't fulfilling enough in the workforce. And I really felt like a small cog in a massive machine, and sitting in a cubicle for the rest of my life. Like, I felt like this sort of star athlete sitting on the sidelines watching my life go by. So really had this burning desire to be an entrepreneur, but didn't really know what that was, what entrepreneur even, you know, the word entrepreneur was. But so happened to stumble across the old book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that really sort of opened my eyes to the real estate world and this whole other, you know, controlling your financial freedom, controlling your financial future, not having to work in the sort of what we're told and what we're taught as kids growing up. You got to go to uni, you got to get a job, you got to stay in this job, and you got to retire at 65. And this sort of other way of thinking of being an entrepreneur, throwing caution to the wind and giving it a crack. And that really resonated with me as a person. Mm. And so when I picked up that book, I happened to realize the blinkers sort of came off a little bit in the job that I was in, because I was surrounded by developers, but I didn't really know what a hell a developer was. And then I started to pay attention, and I started to attend local real estate networking events, rubbing shoulders with agents, you know, trying to understand how to get my money working for me at the end of the day, because you've got two options really. As an employee, you can put your money into real estate, you can put your money into the stocks, into the stock market, and that the stock market didn't really resonate with me, but real estate did. So that was the short story of it. And then my wife, or at the time Erica, she came to Australia, done a master's degree, she'd finished. And I was really like, look, I really loved New York City. I really want to go back there and give it a go, you know, move there and try and find a job. And there's a really awesome visa. I quit my job in Aussie and just moved halfway across the world to New York City, and didn't have a job lined up. And Erica got a job pretty quickly because she's obviously American, but I had to sort of pound the pavements, and I eventually did get a job relatively quickly within 2 months, got the visa, and that was sort of the door opening to the next chapter in my life. That then was, you know, when I moved down the road of real estate investing. For a period of time there, I didn't know if I was going to get a job and I might have to move back to Australia, but I was okay with that risk, right? I was throwing caution to the wind, burning the boats and giving this a go, because the biggest thing that I would fear is regret, that when I wake up when I'm 70 years of age, I would be like, geez, I wish I'd given that a go. And even if I'd failed at it, you know, at least I'd had given it a crack and said to myself, okay, well, you gave it a go. That was the moving to America, coming to America, so to speak. And from there, got into real estate, got a job as a structural engineer, and just started developing my own portfolio. And of investments and bloomed from there. I'm sure we'll get into all the good stuff thereafter.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredible story. I mean, you know, like sometimes they say leap and the net will appear. And, you know, like I can totally think the same way as you in terms of there are moments in your life where you just think, I'm going to do this now or I'm going to regret it forever. Like there's, it's now or never. I mean, congratulations on doing that. But I mean, the net did appear and it appeared in a big way. So you purchased a small duplex for $38,000 and now you're syndicating like multi-million dollar commercial real estate deals across America. In fact, and you were telling me about the latest one, which was in Texas. So tell me a little bit about how you got from buying one small duplex to doing these multi-million dollar deals.
Yeah, well, I'll give a little bit of context to your listeners, particularly being an Aussie coming over here in 2012. A lot of capital from Australia was flooding the American market because of the parity of the Aussie and American dollar. My first $38,000 property, I'm sure some of you, your listeners would have heard just these, we'll call them ghettos in America, these sort of what I call tier two or tier three suburbs and markets. You obviously got on one end the New Yorks, the San Franciscos, the LAs, very Australian-esque in terms of their real estate, high barriers to entry, all that sort of stuff. But then we have got these other markets like Philadelphia, Syracuse, New York, some Texas markets where you can get in at pretty low levels. And I was completely shocked when I moved to America and realized, geez, I can buy something for $50,000. Like, and it was a triplex for that matter, but didn't really understand the word ghetto. And I was essentially investing in the ghetto. Great numbers on paper, but from the reality of managing that type of asset, you can imagine it was pretty hairy at times. And but it got me going, right? It was the whole thing. I was willing to put up this money that it was my money. I was never going to get to deal number 10 without doing deal number one. And I was definitely, you know, had my nose stuck in a book in terms of self-education, going to these networking events and real estate events in New York. But I didn't actually take the leap, right? And I had to go do a deal before, you know, figuring out if my feet got wet or not. So that was a start. And then through a many long journey, we've gone through to now be, you know, raising multi-million dollar deals through a thing called real estate syndication. Built my own business, my own brand, and that hasn't happened overnight, but I'm sure we'll dive into some of the ups and downs of that sort of stuff.
I was going to say, for people that don't understand real estate syndication, can you just explain it to me like I'm five?
Yep. I think the best analogy is, okay, so if I, Reid Goossens, was to go and get a plane, a Qantas Boeing 747, try and fly that plane from Perth to Brisbane, it's going to cost me as an individual to hire the entire plane a lot of bloody money. But if I go and split the cost with 300 other passengers, then we can all enjoy the journey, which is the point A to point B, which was in this case, Brisbane to Perth. And in that analogy, the plane analogy, you'll have the captain, the co-pilot, which will be what we call the operators or the owners of the deal. They may be the real estate business owners. They've found the deal. They've understood what the deal is. They're going to be the captain and co-pilot. You then have people in first class who would be maybe someone who had bought the deal to the table or had found the deal or underwritten the deal, or maybe it's a broker or an agent who brought them the deal to the table, and they may be sitting in first class and they're part of what we call the general partnership. And then you've got everyone else in the back who's an economy or, as I say, in the States, coach. They're people who don't necessarily have the time nor the energy to go out and find great deals, but they want to get their money working for them and they want to invest directly with the operators and directly with the deal. And so they're enjoying not have to put up a ton of capital because it's, you know, split between 300 people. It's a low barrier to entry. They could, maybe it's $50,000 or $100,000, and they can get involved in a larger deal that themselves as an individual wouldn't be able to do on their own. And that, so the collective good of the pool of the investors is able to go and take down this commercial asset, in this analogy, the Boeing 747. And so we're all enjoying this plane ride from point A, which is not having our money working for us, but to point B, where we've bought an investment, we've cycled the investment, and everyone's got a profit at the end, and we all split the profit based on our roles and responsibilities and how much we've invested in the deal. So that in general is, hopefully a five-year-old can understand that, but that's that's the gist of it in terms of what syndication is, pooling investors' money together to go and buy larger assets.
Yeah. So how did you start? Did you start in, well, you know, coach cattle? I think we call it I think it's still called cattle class here. But did you start by sort of at the bottom and then moving your way up to obviously pilot, co-pilot, where you are now?
Well, I actually started probably more in the, we'll call it business first class. So I was able to find a coach who might want to say coach, not actually coach the section in the plane, but a mentor who had done these deals before. So one thing that when you go out and start any business is trying to surround yourself with other people who have done it successfully in the past. You know, the best athletes don't have coaches to get them to where they are. And so I went out and found someone who'd done these deals in the past, because when I moved to the United States, I was, you know, doing a few small deals on my own, but really got to a sort of a ceiling of, I'm still working full time, I'm not financially free, and I want to create a business out of this. So I need to go and up my game a little bit. And so I went and found a pilot, so to speak. And through doing my part of the business, so I was able to build relationships with my own investors, and I was able to bring my investors or my passengers along to this 300-seat Boeing 747. And because I brought my passengers along and I've done some other things in terms of asset management, I was able to sit in first class, and I was able to leverage my investors' money. They invested in this great deal that my mentor had found, and I was able to ride on his coattails. And that was sort of the first deal, and maybe first couple of deals. And then as you build track record, as you build confidence, you can able to graduate from the first class seat into the jump seat, and then from the jump seat into the actual pilot seat. And that's how I've grown my business. And over the last 7 years, I now control about $150 million worth of US multifamily real estate. And that's not to boast, but just to show the sheer scale of syndication. And to break it down even further, syndication, you can apply it to any business. It's not real estate investing. It's, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and the Google founders, they didn't just have a ton of capital sitting on the sidelines when they founded Facebook. They had to go out and raise capital from investors who wanted to take an equity share in the deal and thus enjoy the ride of this Boeing 747, which happened to be Facebook. In my business, it's a multifamily commercial real estate. So in general, it's a way to scale your business quickly. I'm the real estate business expert. I find these great deals. I have investors who want to place capital in my deals because they don't have the time nor the energy. So syndication is really a win-win situation for both the business owner, but also the investors as well.
So let's just go back a little bit. So you got to America, and I mean, this is like starting any business. And I suppose in real estate, you know, you also start as an entrepreneur, maybe on your own, but maybe with the backing of a franchise, and you've got to sort of start building a personal brand. And I know that you've got a cracking personal brand formula, the 6P formula. So let's talk a bit about that and how you use that to, well, to leverage yourself into these deals. Can we go through each of the P's? Would that be cool?
Yeah, that's fine. And just to give you a bit of backstory on these 6 P's, it's not to be too showy, but it's just really something that I was able to observe when I moved to the States, that starting any business, you sort of need these 6 fundamental P's to change perceptions, to change the way people look at you. And so I've come up with 6 P's, which is professionalism, pitch, practice, profile, platform, and patience. And so these are the 6 P's that I've noticed. And there was started with 4 P's and I've expanded it to 6. But the first one, professionalism, is professionalism. People aren't just born with 10 years of real estate experience or 10 years of business experience. You might have come from a past, you might have had a job, you might have had a career before moving into the particular business, you know, becoming an agent, becoming a real estate investor, becoming a business owner, whatever it is. You've got skills from that former life that you can bring into the now. Being punctual, dressing well, conducting yourself with professionalism, you know, being ethical, being transparent, all these things inherently form the basis of your brand, your business. And that's what you're going to want to lean back on when you're trying to attract capital to grow your business. So people just think, oh, I don't have any experience, I can't do it. Well, you do. You just don't know what you don't know. And that's, you've got to look at what the skill sets you do have to understand what you can bring to the table and in terms of professionalism. So that's the first one. The second one is pitch. Now, effectively pitching someone is really kind of a challenge. It can be something that we're not taught a lot of, and pitching perfectly, as the movie went, is that you've got to be able to engage with someone. And a perfect pitch is not someone walking away from a conversation thinking, geez, that was a good pitch. It's someone saying, geez, that was a really bloody good conversation. Mm. And so you want to be able to pitch someone effectively, and I'm talking less than 30 seconds, and not in a cheesy way, but it's something that you've got nailed, right? And a great way is you can talk about, you know, your name, what you do, if you've got any sort of claim to fames or anything that, you know, you noteworthy, and maybe just some of the goals and the future aspirations. So, you know, like with me, I'm Reed Goossens. I'm a real estate investor because, you know, when you're pitching someone, no one wants to guess who you are. If you're a vet, they don't want to be blabbering on for 10 minutes and figure out that you're a vet.
Yeah.
So I'm Reed Goossens. I'm a real estate investor. My sort of noteworthy thing is I moved from Australia to the United States to chase a girl, and now I've formed my own real estate investment business. And so that there breaks the ice, and people are like, what? What'd you do? You know, and so it doesn't have anything to do with my credibility or anything to do with wowing someone, but it's a cool, funny little icebreaker that people can giggle at or whatnot. Then the last...
I just did, yeah. I think it's nice that you're connecting on a human level rather than just about the business.
Right. There's a lot of pitching experts out there. People say, oh, you need a claim to fame. You need, you know, something noteworthy. You know, I've worked with clients in the past where they've used a former, you know, mergers and acquisitions guy. He'd done $6 billion in mergers and acquisitions, but he was coming into real estate and didn't think that was, you know, and I was like, well, what did you do in your former life? Oh, I was a mergers and acquisitions. Oh, okay. How many mergers and acquisitions did you do? Oh, I did $6 billion. I was like, $6 billion, that's huge. Like, to me, that instantly thinks, I think that you understand finances really well. You need to put that in your pitch. So things like that, it goes back to that professionalism, where you've come from in your journey to where you are now to be pitching someone. So it's your name. You want to look, you want to tell someone who you are. So, you know, what you're an investor or you're a real estate agent, you maybe a noteworthy or credibility thing or something fun. Like I moved to the United States to chase a girl and now I'm investing in real estate. That's kind of fun. And then sort of some goals and aspirations. You know, my goal is to help 1,000 people become financially free through investing in US real estate. Now that goal is lofty. It's large. People think, oh, that's a big goal. They might say, oh, like Australians and sort of the British, they, oh, good on you, well done. You know, you never want to be pitching someone to the fact where they're not emotive about your pitch. So an emotive can be both good and bad. If someone disagrees with you, so for example, the Martin Luther King speech, the I Have a Dream speech, he ruffled a lot of feathers, right? But it raised a rally of people to stand up against segregation. Similarly with your sort of pitch, you got to think about pitching effectively to the where it's not someone tapping you on the shoulder or looking across your shoulder to try and get out of the conversation. It's, again, that conversation opener. They're wanting to either engage with you or challenge you on your goals, your lofty goals that might be, but you've got the conversation started. And that's what pitching effectively essentially is getting that conversation to able to then go on to maybe going to have a coffee date, you know, and talking about the business a little bit more one-on-one. You might have met someone in a social setting. You go and have a sit-down lunch or a coffee. And that's where you can present your business idea or whatever it might be. You might have some pamphlets, some leaflets, a magazine or something, some sort of brochure to show the person you're sitting down with, more of a sales pitch. And then, you know, you might move it on to, in my case, I talk about real estate deals. So I might present after a second or third or fourth meeting, I might present an actual deal that I might be raising capital on. And then that would be a closing pitch where someone might either invest or they don't invest. And I will be able to answer their challenges, their gripes about whatever the deal might be. And so really breaking it all down, it's sort of this social setting pitch, an elevator pitch. You want to, you know, have emotion, you know, evoked when you're pitching someone. You want to be able to move that into sort of a sit-down coffee meeting, one-on-one sort of sales pitch, and then you want to move on into a sort of closing pitch. And that's, in my mind, the best way to pitch people. So that's only the second piece.
No, that's good. And I think just to summarize for our audience too, I think that applies to both, say, you're a business leader and you're looking for capital to invest in your business. There's a pitch for that. And then there's also a pitch for, say, you're sitting in someone's living room or kitchen table or whatever, then you've still got to connect with them on a human level and establish that credibility really quickly before, you know, you have that great conversation, which you just mentioned. You don't want to leave someone's kitchen with them stacking away the teacups going, oh my God, that was terrible. You want them to be thinking that was a really great conversation with a really great human.
You hit the nail on the head. There is certain pitching for certain situations, and probably most of your listeners are real estate agents, so they're probably going to be pitching the more corporate executives type, but you also got mum and dad type of people that you're trying to connect with on a human level. And what you roll out in front of certain people is going to be, is real, it's a challenge, but it's, you got to practice it. And that's the other thing is that, for example, Martin Luther King, he didn't just have one pitch and that first pitch changed the world. He did it over thousands of different pictures of, you know, different churches across the deep south before he got onto the Washington Monument. So you've got to do it a lot. It's a learned skill. You're not going to just instantly say one pitch and it changes the whole world and all of a sudden your business is off to the races.
Yeah.
It takes consistency.
Yeah.
And doing it a lot.
I love the Martin Luther King example, actually, because somebody pointed this out to me and I didn't believe it until I actually watched it myself. But if you watch the Martin Luther King speech without the sound on, you can actually almost understand what he's saying by his body language and his emotions. And that's something that the words that we're saying, it's practicing that and actually meaning that the way that Martin Luther King did, I think is also probably a good little tip. Go watch that speech with the sound off and you'll still get the same feeling.
It's all about body language, right? Can't be sitting there with your arms crossed trying to pitch someone. you got to be breaking down that space. That's number two, pitch. Pitch sort of flows into three, which is the practice part of it, which is really what two goes to three. And that is that you have to practice it a lot. It's not going to happen overnight. And taking that pitch that you've got in a social setting, elevator pitch, into a more one-on-one basis where you're saying, hey, I've met you, you know, that's really interesting. I'd love you to come and meet my wife or meet my husband or meet my business partner. Let's schedule a coffee. And that's where the practice comes in. And again, you're not going to close every deal and every pitch. You're trying to educate people about the benefits of what you do as a business, what you do as a quote-unquote thought leader, what you do as an agent. You're not trying to pressure them. It's more a continuation of that great conversation. And people get too stuck in the, I need to make a sale right now because I need to pay the bills. And that's where the desperation comes in. And you've got to learn to dial it back a bit and understand you've got to come from a point of education about whatever you're in. I'm in the real estate investment space, so I need to educate people about real estate syndication. If I don't do that effectively, I'm not pitching effectively and I'm not doing my job as a business leader. So the practice is really important. Then the fourth P is profile. Once we've had a conversation at a social setting, we've had a sit down over lunch. Okay, these people are going to have to Google you. Okay, we'll type the name in Google. What's your profile like online? Do you have bad photos on Facebook that you probably need to rip down?
Yep.
Do you have a professional headshot? It's simple stuff like that. Do you have a professional looking website? Are you Googleable on other people's platforms? You know, have you been cited in a local newspaper or you've been on a podcast or whatever that might be? That profile has that social proof that people want to see when they do Google you, because they want to be able to say, oh, hang on, this person knows what he's talking about. He's been interviewed on all this, and this. So, okay, it's another tick in the box. So pitching was good. We had a really good lunch meeting. And then all of a sudden it's the profile. And I want to engage with this person online. That's really important, the profile part of it.
There is no excuse for not having a good profile picture these days. Like, I know there are some in America, but there's one in Australia, Snapper. They're like the Uber of photography. And I still see so many pictures on LinkedIn that are kind of company logos or, you know, something like that. There is no excuse to have a good photo. And I think what you're talking about there is like, you know, you're stacking social proof on social proof. So, you know, obviously you've got a good LinkedIn profile. I mean, someone like you, you've got a book as well, you know, been on several interviews. And I think, you know, once you stack all that up, then you all of a sudden you've built a really credible, authoritative media profile.
And that comes into the platform part of it in a minute. But you bring up a really good point, and that's how you rock up in that professionalism piece. You know, going to Mark Zuckerberg, he, you know, in the whole online startup tech scenes, I remember hearing some story of a venture capitalist firm that was backing a startup, and the founder of the startup rocked up to this meeting with other, you know, executives in a suit. He's like, what the hell are you doing? Where's your hoodie? He's like, your profile is the hoodie. Like, get back in, you know, your sweatpants and hoodie, because that's what the tech scene is now, you know. And so the profile is also what you want to be recognized as. What are you going to be seen as? Are you suit and tie or, you know, jacket and blouse type of gal or guy? Or are you more the relaxed but yet professional profile online? And you've got to choose, because people will resonate with both. Historically, it's been suit and tie, no tattoos, no piercings, but I see it all today and the way in which we've evolved. And so you may ruffle some feathers in the way you look, but you also need to be professional in the way you approach it and own what you do, because your profile is everything.
I think it depends who you're selling to again, doesn't it? You know, let's say you're up in far north Queensland, Cairns or Townsville or something like that, and you rocked up in a suit, people might think that you're come straight from church or something. Like, you know, yeah, interesting. All right, next.
Platform. You spoke a little bit about that before, and that's part of everything, and it's a little bit to what I was saying about the education piece. It is, you've got to lead with education first, and you're doing this right now with your brand and your profile. You have a platform of a podcast. You have a platform of a magazine. I think you might have also a book, if I'm not...
Me, not yet, but I'm working on it.
Not yet, but not yet, but working on it. Good.
Yeah.
But you're also using mediums like we're talking right now, and people are probably listening to this on iTunes or SoundCloud or Stitcher or Spotify. You know, using these mega, mega expansive, far-reaching platforms to get the message out. And you're leading with education first, regardless of what business you're in. Real estate to selling widgets to selling flip-flops on the side of the road. You got to understand your audience, and you've got to come with education. And I know a lot in the sort of the service-based business realm, which is what we're sort of in, we don't have a widget. Our widget is us, right? Our widget is our brand and our personal brand, and people will invest and buy from us because of us first and foremost, and the deal is sort of kind of secondary. So what information are you putting out there so people can find you that helps you feed that profile, that social proof? And that's the platform part of it. And so like myself, I have a podcast. I started a podcast because when I first moved to the United States, no one was talking to the international investors. So I put my hand up and I said, hey, I've got a weird accent. I'm going to talk about it. I didn't know what a credit score was. You know, I didn't know what an entity was, you know, like all these things that other people might be struggling with, and realizing that you are standing on a mountain of value. And thus, you need to get that value out there. And your platforms can be as simple as a monthly newsletter to your email list. You know, you can just write a few basic articles on your website. It doesn't have to be podcasts and books and videos and highly edited videos with awesome soundtracks. It can be something simple as just a consistent monthly newsletter. And that is really important about whatever you choose, whether it be written, audio, or visual. To get your message out there, you've got to be consistent with it. And I've chosen podcasting. I tried to do blogging. It just wasn't for me. My parents cursed me by calling me Reed, you know, my there's just things that you got to lean into. And some people don't like to be on camera. Some people don't like the sound of their voice. I didn't like the sound of my voice when I first started podcasting, but you know what? Get over it, because I'm not going to scale a business not giving it a go. So that the platform was really important. And then the consistency part, which brings into our last P, which is the patience. So if I go out, you know, I noticed when I launched my podcast, the first 6 months, it was probably my dad, my sister, and my mom listening to it. But then after 12 months of doing it, an hour show every single week, my listenership went through the roof, because iTunes could see with their algorithms that, you know, I was being consistent with it and the patience of it. And so through that, I was able to rank higher. That goes the same with blogging. That goes the same with YouTube, all these algorithms in the back. And that's where you've got to have that social digital assets that you're creating, which is the podcast, the books, the magazines, the articles, the newsletter, that the digital side of it. And you've got to have patience with that. But you also got to have patience on the physical side of the interactions, going out and speaking on other people's podcasts, going and speaking on stage, pitching to your clientele, making sure you're first in mind when people think of anything related to real estate. And that takes time, because the old saying, you got to tell someone 8 times before they change their mind or concept of who you are, is really important. Because I remember when I started pitching, I was like, aren't you an engineer, Reed? What are you doing in the real estate space? People have this, oh, you're in a box and stay in that box and I don't want you to leave. You know, and you got to do it again and again and again and again. And all of a sudden, they start to realize, okay, he's taking himself seriously. He's putting out a podcast. He's putting out education. He's trying to increase his sphere of influence. And through that, people will start being attracted to you and resonate with your brand. And you don't have to be the next Tony Robbins or the next Tim Ferriss or whatever, but you can be a person of influence in your sphere. And people think of you first and foremost when they think about, you know, selling their house and they need a real estate agent. Oh, I know someone. They're really awesome. And they're in my local neighborhood and they're down to earth, and they've got these great articles online that I can read all the time. And I keep up to date with them on their monthly newsletter. Stuff as simple as that. And it can happen as small grassroots. You don't need to be, again, the next big thing on social media, but you can use social media to increase your reach in your sphere.
That's what I say to everyone too, is some people expect that they write one article for us or appear once in the magazine or place one ad or something like that and expect the whole world to change. But, you know, like, people need to see the repetition to build the trust to want to go, I want to talk to Reed.
That's exactly right. Repetition equals trust, right? And if you have a voice and you're resonating with that audience, people are going to start coming towards you and saying, hey, how can I get involved? And, you know, what can I buy from you? Or what can I invest in? So,
absolutely. So I want to talk about one more thing with you, and that is mindset. Obviously, you know, landing in America without the net, hoping that the net would appear. Obviously, there was probably a fair bit of fear going on because that's human nature. We, you know, it's really hard for us to walk into the unknown. Just as creatures, we don't like doing that. Just in case something bad happens to us, we want to go back to safety as quick as we can. Talk to me about how you developed the mindset to be able to put yourself out there and build the business and overcome any fears that you might have had.
Mindset is huge, right? And it comes easier to some than to others. Being a white 6 foot male probably comes a little easier than other attributes to other, you know, opposite sex or a different colored skin or whatever it might be. There's a whole, you know, array of stuff that can affect the way in which you're confident in your mindset. The big thing at the end of the day that you've got to realize is that for me, my why, my juices that make me get up in the morning is having that regret that I didn't live my full life. I didn't live my life on my terms. And if I was to fail along the way in trying to achieve that life on my terms, then that's, I'm okay with that. And it goes back to that uncertainty. My nature is that I like uncertainty. My whole mindset around 10-year goals and 5-year goals, I've sort of thrown that a little bit out the window because you can overestimate what you can achieve in a year, but you can underestimate what you can achieve in a decade. And I look back and 10 years ago, I picked up the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I'm now sitting here talking to you about it halfway across the world and all this great stuff that's going on. I'm not saying that I've arrived by any means, but I'm saying I've really blown myself away in what I have gone out and achieved. And that's scary and I pinch myself every day. But it's also made me realize I can surrender that I don't need to be, I need to be here by the time I'm 45. You know, society has this expectation of me. And right now, my whole mindset is like, I'm just going to work as hard as I can in the next 12 to 18 months, see what doors open up and walk through those doors because I'm living life now. I'm enjoying my life on my terms and the future is going to figure it itself out. And I can, looking back 10 years, it has, right?
Then it will appear.
And it will appear. Now, for those people listening and shy and all that sort of stuff, this right now, me speaking to you and confidence on a podcast hasn't come easy. You know, I have my own demons to deal with. But through practice and through knowing that it's just a learned skill and going out there and pitching and all that great sort of stuff and taking the confidence and taking that leap and jumping and knowing the net will appear, you got to learn to back yourself. And if you can't back yourself, who the hell are you going to ever back in life? And that's one big thing that I've learned is that you got to be able to learn to back yourself. And the buck stops with you. It's no one else's fault. It's not dad's fault. It's not mum's fault. It's not my school's fault. It's not my education. Oh, it's poor me, poor me. It's no, the buck stops with you and you're the only one who can change it. And if you're willing and bold enough to go do it, then bloody hell, go give it a crack and don't be apologetic along the way.
Yeah. Interesting, you know, like because I would call myself an introvert despite all of this. I would definitely, you know, sort of there are times when, you know, I feel nervous and stuff like that. But a wise man once said to me that, and this was good advice actually, he said, if you're feeling a bit scared, then embrace the feeling because this is important and something you should be doing. And so every time my stomach does a flop or I interview someone that I'm in awe of, I kind of think, okay, I'm uncomfortable, but I embrace the uncomfortable now because I just equate that with being important.
Love it. Being uncomfortable. That's essentially what entrepreneurship is. And you'll realize that when you do it more and more, that first bit of being uncomfortable, you're pushing the envelope, right? And that envelope, so all of a sudden, you know, you look back and you think, geez, that it was started like this. And all of a sudden, it's now massive because every day I've kept pushing the envelope. And, you know, I challenge people listening to this show. If you can challenge yourself every single day in 12 months' time, you'll realize how much you keep pushing that envelope and you'll be surprised at the fears you overcome by doing it. Simple, basic things every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've mentioned Rich Dad, Poor Dad a couple of times. Are there any other books or mentors that have been very instrumental in your career?
Yeah, a few things. Two other books for those people. There's actually an Australian author called Dan Priestley, Key Person of Influence, hugely beneficial more from just building online brands and all that sort of stuff. So definitely check out Key Person of Influence. And another one is by Ryan Holiday, Ego is the Enemy. It's another really good book about checking your ego at the door and you know, conflict resolution and stuff like that. So some really good books in and around building confidence, but also then understanding where things break down because of ego.
I'm going to check out both of those, actually, because I haven't read either of those. So I can see you've got a bit of technology there in the background. What are three pieces of tech that you can't live without?
From day to day, from business operations, we have developed, when I say we, my business partner, he lives in Texas, I live in Austin, and I'm about to fly to Japan. And as long as I have my laptop, I want to keep working, and a phone. So we use Slack a lot. Slack is really, really good. Google Drive is pretty basic, but just being mindful of Google Drive that it's there. And the other one is called Smart Sheets, and it's more for project management, just making sure the to-do lists are done. I've come to the point where too much technology can be just overwhelming. Oh, the latest shiny object. And, you know, I have a basic book here that I write all my to-dos for the week to fight off the Sunday scaries, as they say. You know, sit down and write down your goals for the week and write down your goals for the year, or maybe write down your to-do list for the week and the goals that you want to achieve, and then, you know, your yearly goals. And is getting it out of your mind onto a piece of paper is something as simple as that. And I don't use a ton of technologies. I use Zoom, obviously, for media. From the day-to-day, it's getting it out of the head onto paper, using some channels like Slack, Google Drive, Smart Sheets, nothing crazy. Another one for people who may be scared of writing is rev.com, R-E-V.com. You could send them this audio and they would be able to transcribe it for you. It's $1 a minute, and then you can use that as a blog article. So if you're not great at writing, maybe to start your blogs online or to start your newsletter, you can just dictate into your phone, send it to them, they come back and you can just tweak it a little bit with a little bit of instruction, a little bit of conclusion. Boom, there's your first blog.
Yeah, that's what we do, actually, as a giving away all of our secrets today. You've just landed in America and we're just sort of going back here, but I just would like a couple of practical tips for someone who, say, in real estate agent who has all of a sudden just landed in a completely new geographic area and has to set them up again. What are three good tips if you find yourself in a new place to build that network again?
In real estate investing, I used real estate investing clubs in Australia, and I seeked them out in America. Like within 2 weeks fresh off the boat, I was at my first New York Real Estate Investment Association meetup. Find those meetups. If you're in the real estate agent space, go and try and find a meetup of real estate agents or become a part of an association. If there's not one in your area, put your hand up and nominate yourself to put on an event, because you will be a key person of influence. If you're putting on a platform could be a meetup event at a local pub once a month, and people are coming to you for the knowledge, and they'll look at you with, it's some weird thing when you're up on stage with a mic, you're 50% more likely to know what you're talking about than someone standing in the crowd. So the first thing is if you seek that out and you can't find it, back yourself to say, well, I'm going to start this platform, and goes back to those six P's and then be doing it consistently. It all boils down to surrounding yourself with five people you aspire to be. So if you're moving into an area and you see a top performing agent, well, how do you go and either be in their sphere or learn from a little bit more, not to copy them, but to emulate them? Changing your network, coming into a new market, and then establishing yourself as those six P's, those pitching well, making sure your profile's online effectively, and making sure you're establishing a community around you to help support the business, because that's what people want to do. And more we're online, and that's why with your magazine and stuff like that, you can reach a lot larger audience through online communities. But if you're trying to build a nuts and bolts, grassroots type of community, it needs to be more mano a mano, which then has different challenges, and thus you need to have more of a meetup style community being built.
That's a really great idea. I hadn't thought of that. But, you know, like there are a lot of meetup groups in Australia, and it doesn't need to be necessarily a meetup group. You could have a meetup group in your office about German Shepherds, whatever your hobby is. Yeah.
I know so many agents in America who are real estate agents, and they host investment-friendly education nights once a month with food and wine and cheese in their offices. So subconsciously, you're walking into their office, right? And it's like, well, I'm coming here for the education, not a pitch of like, hey, you got to buy this thing. It's purely education, and they don't sell anything. But doing it consistently, there's a group here called For Investor, Buy Investor. Two of the guys that run it are residential real estate agents, but run a real estate investment seminar once a month. 50 to 100 people come, have wine and cheese, and learn from a panel of people who are local experts. That's the other thing. If you do a meetup event, you know, do you know how many people love talking about themselves? Like, you want to emulate that one agent, ask them to come along and be a keynote speaker hopefully for free at your local office to attract other people about the market status or whatever it might be, what a house price is doing. And that's, again, an education. People are being driven through your doors, and you're then creating a rapport with maybe a competitor, but also someone who you look up to. So I know that's the same thing that with my podcast that I've done. You know, a lot of people are talking about themselves for 45 minutes. So of course, they're going to say yes, right?
Absolutely. I usually ask the question, any advice you would give your younger self? I mean, you're still young, obviously. But is there anything you would do differently now, given half the chance?
No. And not, I'm not saying that egotistically. I'm saying it because so many people, and this goes back to mindset, are like, oh gosh, I wish I got into real estate investing 10 years ago. Okay, you didn't. This is your story. This is your journey. Own it. And don't be looking backwards. Only look forwards in terms of what the next 10 years are going to be. You've got here, you got to the stage wherever you are in your business development growth stage through whatever journey it is. And that's yours. Own it. Don't be ashamed of it. I stand here, I've made some mistakes in the past. Okay. But I've learned from those mistakes and that's what's got me here today. And I've got to own it because it's me. It's who I am. And changing that would fundamentally change who the person I am today. And that's not really the goal of it. You want to learn from your past and move forward into a new future. As cheesy as it sounds.
Absolutely. No, I completely get it. Because often, sometimes you learn more from things that you might consider failures than you do your major successes. So exactly. Yeah, it's all an education process. So I want to thank you because we're going to be leaving lots of links in the show notes for this one, I feel, to your website and your book and your podcast and a bunch of the tools and things that we've talked about. Is there one thing that you would like the audience to remember as a result of listening to this podcast?
Yeah, I think the one thing is my dad had this saying, it's called a fool and their money are easily parted. And what it means from a real estate investing point of view, it's quite but for any investment point of view, whether it be into business or into yourself, is like you need to continue to educate yourself. Education doesn't stop when you leave university or you leave high school. You've got to continue to evolve as a business owner, as a thought leader, and you need to never stop growing and learning. And the day you do stop learning and growing is the day you will fail. So don't be a fool and don't have your money ripped away from you.
Yeah.
Ignorance is not an excuse anymore. Everything's at our fingertips. You can find out something by just Googling it. So don't be ignorant.
Yeah, absolutely. So always be learning. Reid Goossens, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.